six.
I have to show y'all what Luke and I found on camera the other day. Now,
it's a bear.
That's a bear, but you see this right here? That's the back of a second bear. There were two bears right there.
Over here.
Boy, that's a big one, too.
That is a big bear. Luke looked around at me and said, hey, is he worth the thing we ought to be walking in here with no gun? I said, it's going to be a big fight.
Well, it was.
Tony's going to be late.
We got a piece of land that Luke and I have. We're the only ones allowed to hunt on it, so.
So you can go bear hunting sometimes.
That's the first thing we say, because it sounds like I'm going to get a bear permit.
Feeding this dog.
David. David had a little bit of it.
No, it's not. 6:59. 7 o'clock.
You know what? We're ready. Mr. O'Brien's not here. Oh, okay. I looked at my phone, it hadn't gone. Okay.
Okay, that's what you told me. I'm just calling the struggle.
I'm glad they told you, and I'm glad you let me know.
Now 7 o'clock, we open the Louisiana County Planning Commission regular meeting for July the 9th at this time. Our first item of business is the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next item is our director's report.
Yes, good evening. I'm glad to be here tonight. My name is Douglas Miles. I'm the new Community Development Director here on behalf of the Planning Department. We have before you the Director's Report. This is updates from the Board of Supervisors' actions from June 19th. There we go. And your the first case on June 19th was the Colonial Circle case that was the rezoning case that created that development, and then the associated SUP request for the increased density for the Colonial Circle residential density as part of that were both approved by the board 4-1 that night. Last week on July 2nd's board meeting, we didn't have any zoning cases. However, we did work with Mr. Payne and the board on the temporary signs ordinance amendment that'll be coming to you all at the Planning Commission. That's something we're gonna set up for you all to review. And then also we worked with the board in the new proffer requirements that are in place now as of July 1st. You remember in the last couple of years, we were not allowed to talk to developers relative to the proffers and the residential cases. The General Assembly has changed some of that along with the home builders and basically developers across Virginia. So we're gonna be able to be working with you all on some zoning cases that have that. So in working with Mr. O'Brien on the board, he asked that we schedule some Planning Commission training with you all on that here at the end of the summer, into the fall. We'll do that, and most likely kind of do that in conjunction with the CIP process this fall, because they work hand in hand. If there's something in the CIP that the Planning Commission and board wants addressed by a developer, they can usually do that and do that type of action, and usually within 2 years or less address that need that might be available. It's not always cash related. It may be land donation, work that needs to be done for on the fire station and so forth in that district. Moving on, Board of Zoning Appeals on June 18th had the Keith Ray variance request. It's located over off of Lake Monticello Road. This was dismissed by a 3-0 vote. Then the Greenberry's request was the variance that it's kind of related to what we're doing tonight, but the variance request was for the setbacks in the Zion Station Industrial subdivision. That was denied 3-0, and we hope Mr. Payne and I have brought forward the amendment for you tonight that we'll talk as reason for the joint work session, or excuse me, joint public hearing. On to some of the county staff planning the technical review committee that was on June 13th. The Fork Union Fire Training Station building went through site development as the request. That's located down in the Fork Union area. Holly Steele, planner, will be doing that for you tonight as well, kind of going over some of that. Everything's in going quite well on that. The next one is the Lane self-storage facility that's located up in the Zion Crossroads area. And Mr. Brad Robinson will be doing that one for you. The Central Virginia Electric Cooperative parking lot expansion. This is the site that's located over off of Union Mills Road, south of there. This is for their expanded broadband requirements so that they can get some of the contractors to have parking and some other areas to do their work before they go in the field. The last one is actually from Mrs. Mary Jane Cathers. This is the Alpaca Farm Products location. Holly Steele and I met with Mrs. Cathers last week. She is still working through some of her architectural plans for the building. We met with the building official, Kevin Zoll. So she's currently not going before for her SUP until she gets those documents into us, so we're working with her. She has a lot of the plans that she needs, we need them in a format that is acceptable to the building official. That's all I have tonight. I appreciate being able to meet all of you all, and I'll meet Ms. Bay here shortly after the meeting. But I'm glad to be here. I've been here about 2 weeks now. If some of you may or might know, I'm coming to you from Prince George County, which is south of Chesterfield in the kind of Petersburg Tri-Cities area. I was there for about 16 and a half years, and then prior to that I was at Chesterfield County Planning for about 10 years. So I've been in the Richmond region, and my wife and I are listed our house yesterday for sale, and we're looking to forward to move here soon. We're working with the real estate agent and quite excited to move to more of the Charlottesville region. So that's all I have, Chairman Boo. I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have any clear stuff.
So we just welcome you some time.
Yes, we do welcome you.
Thank you, sir.
Next item on our agenda is a first of two public comment sections for the night. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak to anything about the county other than this public hearing, which you will be allowed to speak as a public hearing if you're here for that. You will be allowed 3 minutes. Anyone wishing to come forward and state your name. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end our first of two public comment sections for the night, and we'll go over to our minutes from the June 11th and the June 19th meeting. Does anybody have any comments about the meeting, the minutes from June 11th? Does anybody have a motion about the minutes for June 11th?
Move we accept the minutes as presented.
Okay. Have a motion from Mr. Zimmer to accept the minutes for the June 11th meeting. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay. Next item is the minutes for the June 19th meeting, which was a joint meeting with the Board of Supervisors.
call the regular meeting of Havana County Board of Supervisors to order. Do we have an adoption for the agenda?
So may.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. And we will begin looking at public hearing with A, ZTA 1901, Industrial District Setbacks. Brad Robinson.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman. I'm going to give you a brief presentation for zoning text amendment ZTA 1901. So just to make it clear as we move forward, this text amendment is going to apply only to business and industrial subdivisions. It's not going to apply to the districts in their entirety. So it won't apply district-wide. So currently within the I-1 zoning district, our ordinance requires a 50-foot setback from the right-of-way if you're within a subdivision that is for business or industrial use. If you're not, then the setback requirement is normally 100 feet, which would apply to other properties. The 100-foot setback requirement is remaining in effect. It's proposed to remain in effect. And then in the I-2 zoning district, we currently require a 200-foot setback from the street right-of-way, and that's for all properties, regardless of whether they're within a subdivision for business or industrial use or not. So on the screen, you see the chart of our current setback requirements and what I'm speaking of. So as I was saying, in the I-1 district currently, you're normally required to have a 100-foot setback. If you're within a subdivision for business or industrial use, you're allowed to go down to 50 feet. In the I-2 district, we have just a straightforward 200-foot setback, and there is no exception as to whether you're in a subdivision or not. So just some background on what kind of initiated this discussion and this zoning text amendment. Some of you are aware that the Board of Zoning Appeals recently heard a case for one of the lots in Zion Station subdivision. It was lot 6, which is on the screen. It's a corner lot that was situated at two intersections, and based on the two street frontages, they were required to meet a front setback from both street frontages. And as you saw with the regulations that I just went over, they would have been required based on the I-1 zoning of the property to have a 50-foot setback from both street frontages. So they submitted a variance request asking to reduce that setback from 50 feet to 25 feet. There were several issues in that variance request, some concerns that they didn't meet all of the criteria that you're required to meet by state code and our county regulations to be granted a variance. So that is kind of what initiated this discussion about instead of having the applicant request a variance, maybe the county should take a look at amending the ordinance instead. So our county attorney drafted a resolution, which is in the packet, and that resolution was adopted by the board at their June 5th meeting. So currently, the ordinance that accompanies that resolution proposes to reduce the current setback in the I-1 district. If you're within a subdivision for business or industrial use, reduce that setback from 50 feet to basically not having a setback requirement at all. So if you see on the screen, it's striking the language of 50 feet minimum setback. And basically, the language proposes that the building just has to be located in a manner that it at all times is located as to provide safe and efficient access to, from, and within the property, including site distance and turning, stacking, and other traffic circulation features and facilities. So rather than having a minimum setback of 50, we would not have a setback requirement, and it would allow flexibility to locate the building on the site based on the conditions of the site. And then within the I-2 district, as I mentioned earlier, we currently don't have a provision for applicants to go less than 200 feet if they're within a subdivision for business or industrial use. So the county attorney has drafted the ordinance that adds similar language as you see in the I-1 district to the two districts, so this language is basically identical. And it also proposes that buildings, it doesn't propose a minimum setback, but just states that the buildings have to be located so as to provide safe and efficient access to, from, and within the property. And again, just to make sure it's clear, in the I-1 district, properties that are not in a subdivision will continue to meet the 100-foot setback. And in the I-2 district, properties that are not within a subdivision will continue to meet our 200-foot setback. So to conclude my presentation, this text amendment is proposing to remove the requirement of a minimum building setback from the street right-of-way within industrial and business subdivisions. It would allow flexibility with site design and building orientation based on the site. And the proposed text amendment was intended to encourage economic development in the county. Now, as you move forward into your discussion, the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors may want to also consider, instead of not having a setback requirement, possibly reducing our current setback requirement of 50 feet in the I-1 district or 200 feet in the I-2 district. And again, this is within subdivisions. So as you see on the screen, staff has kind of talked and discussed amongst ourselves and kind of agreed on a recommending maybe a 25-foot minimum, but you're certainly welcome to come up with whatever you feel is appropriate. So that concludes my presentation. I can try to answer any questions you might have at this time.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a couple of observations?
Yes, sir.
First of all, just be conscious of the fact that this amendment deals only with a setback from the roads. If you recall, there was an amendment not too long ago concerning setback from abutting properties of different zoning characteristics. That will remain unchanged by this. The second thing is, with this, as to the staff's comments, I don't have any problem with what the staff's recommending with the 25 feet. That's entirely up to you all. When I drafted it with essentially a zero setback, subject to the traffic concerns and whatnot, my concept there was to make it as flexible for you as possible, so that if you thought it didn't need a setback, you would have it before you and you could adopt it. If you thought it needed anything between 50 feet and zero, you could amend it to say that. So the staff and I are in agreement with their recommendation. They have good reasons for the 25 feet, and I don't have a problem with that.
Thank you. In our discussion today earlier, when we had a conference call, I also thought 25 feet would be advisable. One of the things I was looking at is this may work with zero today, but it might change as future goes on. One of the things I thought about is, suppose we did not require a sidewalk for this piece of property and pedestrian traffic came along, where would we put a sidewalk? Also, the fact that possibility, if underground utilities were needed at some time or other, we would be forced to tear up the road and be putting the underground utilities. So I was just thinking the fact that we need at least a 25-foot setback.
That's correct. It should. We currently have a minimum 25-foot setback for the parking. So that was some of the reasoning behind why we chose to go with 25-foot. It would be in line with the minimum parking setback.
This zoning text amendment came to us kind of from a specific request there in the subdivision we saw. Would this, to 25 feet, meet their proposed needs? Would their proposed plan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That was the variance they were asking for.
Right.
That's not why the staff picked that number, but it is.
Correct.
So if I can get just a little bit more clarification, I mean, I just misinterpreted.
yes, you did misunderstand it. The original draft, the one you have in your packet, talks about no setback except to accommodate those concerns of traffic and whatnot. This draft is being proposed to be revised so that the 25 feet is a hard number. If there's a traffic problem, for example, if there's a site distance problem, the setback could be increased to accommodate that, but it would be at least 25.
So we would be proposing to keep the safety language in there.
Yes.
And just not allow it to go below 25 feet.
Yes, correct.
So we could require it to be 50 or 75 or whatever, I guess.
If you do nothing, it'll be 50 feet in the I-1 and 200 feet in the I-2. You could do that, just leave it alone. You could reduce it to zero or anything in between. And they don't have to be identical. It just makes sense that they should be. Made sense to me.
And are there any questions from him?
No.
Should any language be reserved to, say, in an I-2 situation to allow the setback to be greater than 25 feet?
It is. If that was the safety language, would allow that.
Okay. Sorry, I missed that. Now, the thought comes to mind of Papa Jim's. We had that setback issue with them a while back where they were approaching.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of concern about whether the building was too close to the road and safety and so on. So that's
the kind of thing that language is intended to accommodate. So if you needed, the first thing that occurred to me was site distance. So that if you had a building that was right up on the road, you might not have a safe entrance. But it would also accommodate stacking lanes and things like that. Papa Jim's was, of course, a different situation because there were existing buildings.
Sure.
But that's not a bad analogy.
Alrighty.
Does anybody else have any questions for staff?
And from also what I heard you say, Mr. Robinson and Mr. Payne, that making this change to 25 feet would encourage the economic development that we are looking for.
I feel it would assist with properties that are within subdivisions, industrial subdivisions.
The concept is it allows a greater concentration of the industrial uses.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take a given building coverage, you can accommodate on a smaller area so that you can get more bang for your buck for your industrial property, essentially.
And
make it more efficient.
If somebody wanted to go below 25 feet, they just have to come back and do the process all over again.
Well, they're going to have trouble getting below 25 feet because they would then be in the same situation that this applicant was in this case. The Board of Zoning Appeals doesn't act the way either the commission or the Board of Supervisors does. It's governed by some really quite strict evidentiary rules. And the problem with this applicant was that there were at least two of these statutory criteria that they couldn't meet. And, everything needs to be taken on its own factual merits. But I would anticipate you'd have the same thing if somebody came back and said, I can't meet 25.
So that's why you had the language in there at the beginning with no setback.
Well,
So if that happened, they had to put something within 10 feet.
My suggestion for that was simply, if you want to increase the efficiency of the use of industrial land, don't have a setback. And
okay.
The staff is a more nuanced view of it, with which I have no argument. But I can see why they would be. It's in some sense it's better to have a number, because then everybody can look at the number and see what to plan for. The other one was a more subtle, site-specific approach.
And this is different than Papa John's, which is on 15. This only would only contribute to the setbacks in the subdivisions.
That's correct.
So Papa John would still have to have 100 feet.
Well, if it were industrial, yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's an important point. What we talked about as staff is that basically in the industrial subdivisions, Ion Crossroads or what have you, where we're encouraging the economic development. We still, on routes like 15 and 53 and other major corridors, want to have a 100-foot setback for future widening or straightening or whatever that VDOT may do, so that we have that adequate space. So 20 or 30 years from now, the building's not 5 feet from the road with the sidewalk. So again.
Of course, the other thing is with a major road like 15, one of the things that we've seen in real life occasionally with an industrial use is the size of the vehicles going in and out of them. You don't have enough stacking space, and you end up with a major tractor trailer, and it ends up hanging out into the road. So that 100-foot setback makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons in that case. In an industrial subdivision, you know, that's everybody's in the same boat, basically, that you've got to design your building to accommodate that sort of thing.
And once you're inside the industrial subdivision, you're not going 55 miles an hour.
I hope not.
Another concern I had is the fact is that, say you had a corner lot, and you had to set back over here, but it was up against the land, property line here, and you also have a road here, and you come up to the stop sign, that building would be blocking part of the site.
Do it every day in Wilmington.
But that could be.
And I worry about it every day.
We do, in fact, but that could be, I mean, that's the kind of safety thing that the language without the 25-foot minimum would deal with. You know, that when that site plan came in, you saw that I want my building to be on the corner of the road. Surely staff, I would trust staff to say, no, that's not going to fly because you need some site distance. And you don't need a lot of site distance when you're on the go on 20 miles an hour or 25, hopefully, in the subdivision. I mean, I think there's real value into using the industrially zoned land as efficiently as you possibly can, which means squeeze it as much as you can into every acre of that property within the limits of safety concerns.
Mr. Chairman, you may want to note Mr. Zimmer is a member of the Board of Zoning Appeals, so he heard the discussion there, so if he could educate you.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, your comment was somebody could come and get below the 25 if that's the rule. I don't think that would happen because it's something that applies to every similarly zoned property, which is one of the criteria for not approving it. Right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that would happen.
If there's no other questions for staff, we'll open the public hearing at this time. Anyone wanting to come forward and speak about this, please come forward, state your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the public hearing on this matter and open it for discussion.
Mr. Zimmer, I think you just said that you would have you would have more ability to do stuff without 25 feet than you would with 25 feet.
I mean, the business would. The BZA wouldn't have to rule on anything if they
right.
had that. Yeah, they wouldn't have to get a zoning text or a zoning variance.
I believe for many reasons that 25 foot is reasonable, and I think also the planning staff looked into that, and they recommend that also. Like I said, many reasons that you might want to end up putting a sidewalk because you don't have a place to put a sidewalk. You want to put in underground utilities and you don't have it. So we're talking about sometimes the present, but we got to think about the future when
sidewalk ordinance, wouldn't they have to have a waiver when they built it and not to have a sidewalk?
We could possibly have done that, you know, and at the time, we may say that sidewalk is not necessary, maybe a sidewalk is nowhere, but then the pedestrian traffic may increase in that area, and we might think that we need a sidewalk, and then we don't have a place to put it.
We're talking about this would only apply in areas that are industrial, is correct?
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm not gonna, whatever the proposal is, I'm not gonna vote against it, I'll say that, I think this needs to be done, but I think the 25 is a needless restriction. I think based on where, because of where it's located, it's in industrially zoned subdivisions, I think all those things, typically, they're gonna have the utility infrastructure in them already, so we're not really a big concern about putting more utilities on those streets in there that this 25 feet would allow for. The roads are what the roads are, they're gonna be built for industrial traffic, because it's in an industrial subdivision already. I think all that stuff's been accounted for by the fact that it's an industrial subdivision, and I would rather see us provide the maximum flexibility for the folks to utilize the space. Again, there's not that many properties zoned industrial. Folks aren't gonna do that unless they have a business in mind, because it increases their tax burden likely. There's just a lot of reasons to use that most efficiently, and a 25-foot setback around the whole property or along all the roads isn't necessarily needed every time. So I think there's opportunity to use it more efficiently if we don't.
I think I would agree with the zero setback too. The thing about it, sometimes these regulations you pass, they have good intentions, but further on up the line, somebody else is interpreting, they look at it, and they say it's carved in stone, and that's what it is, and we gotta live with it. I would agree with almost the senator today.
Okay, do we have any more discussion? Okay. Do I have a motion from the Planning Commission about this?
Mr. Chairman, just for your guidance and your action, you'll note that draft ordinance version 1 is the zero setback. Version 2 is the 25-foot setback. So when you make a motion, if you make a motion to approve, you should reference one or the other.
So what are they again?
1 and 0.
0 on the left, 25 on the right.
So I'd like to make a motion. I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of version 1, zero setback, right? Version 1 of ZTA 1901, an ordinance to amend chapter 22 of the Yavanna County Code by the addition of a new subsection 22-11-5 and 22-12-5 to reduce the minimum building setbacks for properties in industrial subdivisions in version 1-0. Potential for zero setback.
Okay, I have a motion from Mr. Zimmer for version 1. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Johnson for the version 1. All in favor of version 1, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes no. 4-1.
Alrighty. Do we have a motion?
I have one question.
Yes, ma'am.
Right now, how is the subdivision being provided water and sewer?
We don't have public water up there yet.
Right. So is it on wells?
It will be on this property.
It will be public.
We're taking easements across lots in this subdivision.
If the subdivision wants to hook up to it, they certainly can hook up to it. So how they get the water to each building, that's to be determined.
Well, that's what I was concerned about, is if they're going to take the pipes in there, they'll have to be able to get them in the ground. That's all.
In other words, you need 25 feet, possibly.
Well,
I mean,
my one thought about that is if somebody's putting a building in there between now and a year from now when we have pipes in the ground, they're going to plan for that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, but what if there are no pipes in the ground at that point in time, and then 5 years later, they expand and as they pedestrian over there. It's a pretty small distance to give up for future planning. And I just think it's yeah, even though you hope the best decisions are made by planning and by staff and so on, it's you know, it's always hard to see in the future. This is just one area where I think we can prevent some additional costs down the road for the county from that perspective.
And just one thing to add, the 0 to 25, those are just, I mean, the board can choose something in between that amount too, if they choose. Just keep that in mind.
My only thought, Lord knows there's plenty of real estate to purchase, but we lose a business because they needed a 20-foot setback instead of 25, and there is no flexibility to deal with.
What is typical in other counties?
The staff report contains a list of a number of other counties. And they range from, Mr. Lagomarsino can correct me, but I think it's 10 feet in Almaral, and it goes to various numbers, 50 feet, 100 feet.
Yeah, Almaral was 10 right feet, Dinwiddie was, looks like
10.
Yeah, Almaral's 10.
I think we need some distance there, whether it's 25 feet or not.
It's the bottom. Keep going down.
I would caution you, if you're going to put, I think the staff has a good rationale for the 25 feet. The zero line is self-evident. If you're going to do anything else, just be mindful of how you get to that number. You need to justify it in your own mind, how you get there.
Well, if we don't have a setback in the planning stage when it's being built, wouldn't you consider that it had to have pipes since we're taking water up there? Wouldn't that be up to the planning department at that point if there's no specific setback?
That's right, Mrs. Eager. After this ordinance is adopted, once we go forward in any administrative site plan review, we're going to administer whatever is adopted tonight. So I want to also remind you that we started at 100, then we went to 50, and now we're at 25 and zero. So basically, the way that the ordinance amendment and the current ordinance is set up is, if you're able to meet in the industrial subdivisions, the what I call uses a use with a setback with certain restrictions, you're meeting those things, those criteria, then that would be appropriate. If not, you would go back to 50 and then as Mr. Payne has indicated. So we do recommend, again, a 25-foot setback. We feel that's appropriate. With your parking being at 25, you can't have the building in front of that.
You could park in that 25-foot setback?
No.
No parking?
It's 25-foot setback for the parking.
For the parking. Mm-hmm. So, in essence, the building would be at the property line, and your parking would be behind it now, because you'd have to meet a 25-foot setback. And you can't meet a 25-foot setback for parking.
It's possible to do that if you had relegated parking or something like of that sort, but it would. He's quite correct. If you're going to do an ordinary building with parking in front, you can't put it less than 25 feet anyway.
Because you have to have the parking lot there.
If you're going to have the parking lot in front, the parking lot's going to be 25 feet.
Right, so it's our intention that all the parking will be behind these buildings?
No, not necessarily. The one you saw from the Board of Zoning Appeals, the building's L-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
So the parking is kind of in the junction between the two arms of the L.
Okay.
I mean, for that particular subdivision, let's just say you had zero, I mean, that property owner developer could bring the property out to the edge of the property line a little bit closer, and he still has the parking in the middle. Maybe bring
I think it's fair to say that with this, what I would call the safety language, you're not going to see a building right on the right-of-way line, because it wouldn't be practical to do that and get stacking, site distance and stacking space and all that kind of thing in. But it's flexible up to a point. You can see what I was saying about the L-shaped building.
So that's 25 feet in the white as a setback?
This area right here on the radius of the cul-de-sac that Mr. Dahl's gonna show you?
That's the 25 feet.
That's the 25-foot setback that this building's currently meeting. The one they weren't meeting was over here, I believe, Mr. Zimmer, right here. In this area. The corner of the building.
Eventually, we're not gonna meet the 50-foot setback on the other end of that building.
But they meet the 25-foot setback?
For this particular.
Oh, I got you. The one line that goes through the building twice is a 50-foot line.
This is just an example. This is it's a good example for a lot of purposes, but this is gonna apply across the board. So it wouldn't have to be a corner lot, wouldn't have to be an L-shaped building. You could put the parking, parking could be behind it if the building was set back 25 feet. Wouldn't make any difference. If you're familiar with, what's the shopping center in Almar where Target is, Mr. Martin Senior?
Hollywood Town Center?
Hollywood Town Center. That's an example of a shopping center that has what's called relegated parking. So the building is, there's no parking between the building and the highway, but it's not right on the highway. There's space there for various things, landscaping and whatnot.
So I wonder if you looked at that particular example there, I mean, from a safety concern perspective, you know, if we had a zero setback rule and you look at the corner edge there on the road, would that be even highlighted at that point in time? What would the decision making be for that corner side? I get that you would have the whole building in front of the road necessarily right there, but a corner of it could be in front of the road. And then on the other side, you might have property that's restricted in terms of expansion. So to me, that if I was looking at that and I was looking at a main road or a road that was passing by there, I'd be concerned. That's way too close. Just one mistake, right? At the corner of the building.
Yep, I concur with you, Tony, on that. I think there needs to be some rule of order on that. And 25 feet does seem to be a compromise. I mean, I think safety has a lot to do with that, not only the sidewalks and lines and everything else, but I think it's prudent to do that now rather than wait 5 or 10 years later and you're not sure how that's gonna work out there. And I think you need to set that rule now.
I would note that, at least on the notes right here in the surrounding counties, all laws are the least restricted at 10 feet, the rest of the rest are at least 20 feet or more. So if we get zero, we would be the least restricted.
That's an odd situation, isn't it?
All the law being more friendly.
All righty, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approves ETA 1901 ordinance to amend Chapter 22 of the Savannah County Code by the addition of a new subsection 2211.5 and 2211.12.5 to reduce the minimum building setbacks for properties in industrial subdivisions according to draft ordinance version 2.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So made.
A motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We get to leave y'all tonight.
You all have to work tonight.
Yeah. Y'all have the rest of the night off.
Yes. With pay.
Thank y'all very much.
Thank y'all.
See you. Well, they got out in a hurry. See you, Trish.
Bye-bye.
At this time, we will continue our meeting. There is no presentation tonight, and we will go straight to site development plans. The first item is SDP 1905, 4 Feet and Fire Training Building.
Are you clicking through, or you want me to?
You can.
Okay. Good evening. This is Site Development Plan 1905. This is the Fork Union Fire Training Building. This is a request for approval to construct a fire training building with respect to 10 acres of tax map 51, Section A, Parcel 129. This parcel is zoned I-1 and is located within the Fork Union Community Planning Area and Election District. The adjoining parcels are zoned I-1 and A-1, which is industrial and agricultural. Okay, so you can see this is the aerial. This is the Fluvanna Community Center. So you can see this is where the new fire training building would be located. This is the zoning map, so you can see this parcel is industrial, and then everything around it is A1 agricultural. Okay, this is the sketch plan. So to put this in perspective, if you're looking at it from an aerial view, this is the basketball court, and over here is the existing community center. So this would be leading, sorry, this is the basketball court. This is the existing parking lot on the side of the community center. So they're proposing to build a road back behind the building that would go to the fire training building. This building will be 50 by 22 feet and constructed on an 80 by 52 building pad. It is to be constructed behind the community center and will be accessed via a paved driveway with gravel shoulders on both sides. And the driveway circles completely around the entire building, like you saw in the sketch plan. At the entrance to the paved driveway, there will be a 20-foot wide double leaf gate to prevent access to the building during times other than when they're having trainings. And there's also a 6-foot tall fence constructed on both sides of the entrance gate. So here's some site photos. This is from sitting in the parking lot right next to the community center, looking back towards where the actual building will be. This is the basketball court, so the building will be right back here. And this is the drive that leads off the parking lot back to the area where it will be. Okay, so this is the parking lot that we were referring to, and this is the community center. Okay, and this is the view sitting on Route 15 looking over. So there is a little bit of a hill, and back there you can barely see it as the basketball court. So this building, if at all, will be barely seen from the road.
How tall is it?
I'll have to look at the site plan. So to conclude, this sketch plan is a request to construct a fire training building with respect to 10 acres of tax map 51, Section A, Parcel 129. It appears to meet the requirements of the zoning ordinance. The final site plan must comply with all aspects of the zoning ordinance and will be submitted for final review and approval. Staff recommends approval of SDP 1905, subject to the three conditions listed in the staff report and on the following slide. So these are recommended conditions that the applicant meet all final site plan requirements, including parking, landscaping, outdoor lighting, meet all required erosion and sediment control regulations, and meet all VDOT requirements. So that's all I have. If you all have any questions for me or Mr. Benjamin Powell is the project manager for this project, and he is here as well to answer any more specific questions about the project. You guys,
Mr. Chairman, can I make an observation? Could you put up the tax map? That's okay.
The county already owns this industrial zone property. This property to the, I guess it's the southwest, is under contract for the county. And we'll be closing that this month.
So this application is being made by the county.
That's right.
Yes,
this is
correct.
Public use. It's publicly owned property. But I didn't want you to think we were not considering this property, because it will be owned by the county by the time any construction starts.
And I see the fire training building. Fire department would normally refer to as a burn building.
Yes.
Lighting barrels on fire, things like that.
Yes, and this is a need for the county. Chief Brent said that we currently have to go to other counties to use there, so this is something we are definitely in need of.
Is it going to be a cinder block building or a metal building?
Would y'all have any other questions for me before I hand the reins over?
To your question, Mr. Lacamacino, the building is a Virginia Department of Fire Programs Prototype 2 Class A building. In other words, it'll be a metal-clad building with concrete floors. The roof will be flat with a concrete roof, but half the roof will be flat. The other half will be an A-frame type structure. In your question about the height, it's probably 30 feet or less in height at the peak of the A-frame part of the roof. So the building will not burn. In fact, Class A means it will be burning nothing but either straw, Excelsior paper, or something like that in the building. And the building is monitored by a heat system so that when it gets to a certain temperature for the safety reasons for the trainees, it'll alert and the building will be immediately cooled down. But nothing can be used in there except that Class A material.
Water supply for the training, would that be tanker operations or would it be hydrants?
No, when the site's done, we'll have a 6-inch line tapped in off Route 15. It'll be a split. There'll be one hydrant at two points around the building for supply.
And the last question that I can think of right now, is there any future plans for classroom facilities? That's one of the problems that we have with our training center.
Yeah.
Well, the nice thing is we do have the community center right there. So, you know, there's classroom and big open space available right next to the burn building. I mean, probably no more than, what, 50 yards away maybe?
Right.
So, I mean, in the community center, there is big space, but
and
I don't think it's contemplated at this point for a major building around the burn building.
And, of course, we've got Fort Union Fire Department right there that has the classroom space inside that also, that plenty of parking that they can drive over to that once we're finished and doing that.
Would the site be big enough for EVOC training or anything like that?
It's whatever the Fire Rescue Association wants to plan ahead for and get funding for, but it's a large site there. So there has been discussion of some tower work, you know, 4 or 5 stories for allowing either ground ladders or aerial ladders and, you know, high-rise type fires. Also for the rescue people for extrication, different types of vehicles in there and so forth. Confined space, developing something that below ground so that we can practice that. And then initially we do have, after the construction, trying to put a picnic type shelter there with picnic tables so that you can do some outdoor classroom space. And with the 200 amp electrical service that we'd like to put in, we can add some outlets so you can use PowerPoint or something else for classroom space there.
Is there going to be, since it's right there behind the community center, I'm understanding there's going to be a different driveway going back to that unit than what the public normally uses, right?
Right now, initially, it's going to be the entrance for the community center off 15, and they'll go across the front of the building and make a right into that side driveway, and that's how they'll access the property in the back.
So will there be some signs or something up that this says authorized access only, so that folks?
Well, we haven't, but we certainly can put some signs up. That's certainly not an issue.
There's gate fence.
Yeah.
Could be a locked gate, right?
Yeah.
That'll be behind the building where the access driveway begins, behind the building. But yes, access off 15 and into that driveway space for the community center, there'll have to be some marking there for width for the apparatus to get in and so forth. So,
I'm just thinking, like one of the burn particular areas where I've worked is already on, you have to be authorized to go there, so people aren't just showing up. Whereas we're right behind the community center, that's public access, and you know, people may want to test it out. You know, like, you know, just going there. So I'm just thinking about it's a really good idea. Certainly, we need it to be able to host our own training ground. And I do like the fact that, Mr. Administrator, you were talking about using the community center with the classrooms that's already there. So, you know, we're maximizing the spaces that we may not readily effectively without building unnecessarily. And then certainly if the support system you were talking about in terms of funding, that funds can be applied to something else that would be more needed, and we can use, you know, the centers and the spaces that we already have that's underused already.
Yeah, I think between the Fort Union Fire Station and the community center that's there, there's ample space to do, you know, whether it's a larger, you know, I mean, I know we've had lots of things in the, in kind of like the auditorium of the community center, you can hold 50 to probably, if you're doing some type of exercises, maybe hold 50 people, but, I mean, so yeah, there is plenty of space there to do something like that. And to answer your question about the gate, I don't think that was talked about to this point, having any type of gate back there, but it's certainly something that we could put back there after the fact. I mean, it's not something that would be difficult to do.
Fire programs through the grant process requires, one, some type of security for the entrance, and so that would be a gate in the fence on both sides. So that's part of the grant that we have to meet for the grant process. And so that, you know, once this is finished, that'll be in place and so forth, so.
In the introduction, that showed a 20-foot gate and a 6-foot fence, right?
Yes, sir.
Is the basketball court still being used? It didn't look like it was in great shape. Okay.
Yeah, it was, in fact, we noticed a brand new nets up on the goalpost.
Oh, the nets there, really?
Yeah, so I'm assuming it might be too hot now, but maybe in the fall it'll make use of it, so.
Okay.
Almost looks like grass growing.
Well, it is a little bit, but they've seen some children, you know, young people out there playing.
Challenges to play basketball.
You have to dribble that ball, the grass off the ground.
Anybody have any other questions from the staff or the person that's in charge of the project? If not, any discussion that we need to talk about? I think it's a good thing, and the fact that it will be the fact that the people in the county will not no longer have to go out of the county to do the training for it, in mentions both fire and rescue squad in the package here. So the fire chief commented that the fire and rescue personnel currently have to go to other counties in order to complete their training. This building is regularly anticipated.
Yeah, I do know, I have personal knowledge that they try to use the Alamore Charlottesville one, and their scheduling challenges with the way that the recruit schools and stuff run for those jurisdictions. So without this facility, you've got to schedule your training around that training.
And it's
tough too when you got a lot of volunteers having to go outside the county, whereas if they're right in the county, it makes them more available if something does come up. They're right there.
And usually it's when you're out of the county that big stuff comes up.
Yeah, a lot of your resources are going, your apparatus and stuff to do that, so, yeah.
If there's no more discussion of the Planning Commission, no more questions, do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion, Willie.
I move to approve SDP 1905, a sketch plan request to construct a fire training building with respect to 10 acres of tax map 51, section 8, parcel 129, located in Four Keenan Elementary Election District and Four Keenan Community Planning Area, subject to 3 conditions listed in the staff report.
I have a motion by Mr. Johnson to approve this. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Lagosino. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay, the next item on the agenda is SDP 1908. Lane self-storage.
All right, Mr. Chairman and Commission, this is Site Development Plan 1908 for Lane self-storage. This is a request for sketch plan approval to construct a self-storage facility on property identified as tax map 5A59. That parcel is 4.337 acres. The self-storage facility would consist of 7 storage buildings, a parking area, and travelways, as you'll see on the sketch plan. The parcel is zoned I-1, and it is within the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area. And as you'll see on the zoning map, it is surrounded by A1 zoning. This is the location of the parcel in the county. You can see it's basically right at the northern tip near Zion Crossroads. And this is an aerial of the site and the surrounding area. So the parcel is here. You can see it's currently open and vacant. The parcel did contain a residential use on it at one time, but that home was demolished several years ago. And the property was rezoned, as you saw in the staff report, in 2015, I believe, to the current I-1 zoning. So this is the zoning map, which shows the parcel with its I-1 zoning, surrounded by A-1. But because this is near Zion Crossroads, there are some other different zoning districts in proximity to the parcel. You have I-2 over here, more I-1 here, and then there's also some B-1 zoning. So this is the sketch plan that has been submitted by the applicant. If you were to flip this image upside down, you're actually heading to Zion's Crossroads. You'd be going in this direction. This direction going north on the screen is bringing you to Palmyra. So this is, there's an existing entrance to the property that a driveway was located there that served that residential use. That the entrance is proposed to remain in that location and be improved and widened to access the site. And then at the front of the parcel, there's a small parking area proposed with 8 parking spaces. And then you'll have the 7 storage buildings to the rear of that parking area. And then there'll be access to the sides here for emergency access to go around the site if needed. And in addition to parking areas, the parking area, the travelways around the buildings, and then the buildings, you'll also have some landscaping on the site as well. So again, as I just mentioned, the property is currently vacant, proposing 7 storage buildings. The total square footage of those buildings would add up to over 54,000 square feet. The smallest building is over 5,600 square feet, and then the largest building would be over 11,000 square feet. That parking area will contain 8 spaces, and there would also be landscaping and screening on the site as required by the ordinance. So to conclude, this is a sketch plan for 7 self-storage buildings. The project appears to meet the requirements of the ordinance. They would be required to submit a final site plan after tonight that would comply with all of the zoning ordinance regulations and final review from and approval from other agencies as well. So staff recommends approval of site development plan 1908, subject to the 3 conditions listed in the staff report. So that concludes my presentation, and I do believe the applicant's representative is present as well for questions. I can attempt to answer any questions you might have.
VDOT saying that the entrance will probably have to be approved to either a low volume commercial or a commercial entrance, depending on what their study revealed. But that would come up at a later site plan.
That's correct.
Will any of the storage units be climate controlled?
I'm going to have to defer that question to the applicant. I believe so, okay. But I'll.
Yes.
Did anybody have any more questions, Rob? Thank you.
Hello, my name is Michael Chandler. I'm with Ship Engineering, the representative for this project. And to address your comment, there will be climate control. Could I get you to switch back to the site plan? So we're going to have one self, one building is going, I'm sorry, is actually going to, so if you look at the 2 buildings on the lower half where they have steps in the buildings, those 2 are,
you can use the pointer right there.
Fantastic.
That's the front right one and then the back center.
See this one here, and this one here will be climate controlled. So for reference, that's a 10,000 square foot and a 11,400 square foot.
So 7 buildings.
7 total.
The fire chief expressed concerns about access.
Yes, the fire chief wanted us to provide access that he could go all the way around the property without having to make any turns. So we extended the fence to have a gate here and here, and that's going to be locked with a key, only for fire access, emergency access. I'm sorry?
Can you use not locked access?
We can do that, yes. And the main entrance will be a motorized gate right here, sliding in this direction.
That's a keypad access.
Yes, there's actually going to be so there won't be any employees. There's actually going to be a machine that's operating the access to the facility. Yes. And we have gone ahead and done a low volume entrance per VDOT's concerns. This is a low volume entrance at the moment with a slight taper per the specifications. Thank you.
Okay. The next site plan is SDP 1910, Central Virginia Electric Cooperative. Mr. Robinson presenting that.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and Commission, this is Site Development 1910, submitted by Central Virginia Electric Cooperative. This is a request for sketch plan approval to construct an employee parking area on the site. The property is tax map 10A32, which is 41.815 acres. The parking area that they wish to construct would contain 26 spaces. And as you'll see, the parcel is zoned B1, which is business, and it is located within a rural residential planning area. Adjoining parcels around the site are zoned A1. So this is the location of the parcel in the county. It's sort of along the Route 15 corridor in between Palmyra and Zion's Crossroads. And this is an aerial image of the property. The site has frontage along two roads, Route 15 and then Salem Church Road to the west. So the site runs between the two roads, and they do have access from both sides of the property, but the parking area in question would be accessed from Salem Church Road, as you'll see on the sketch plan. And it's kind of important to note on, as you see on the area, you'll see this, so the newer development has been concentrated on the western side of the property. There are some older facilities towards the eastern side of the property that there's a couple of buildings, I believe at least one or two buildings that may not currently be in use because they built a newer office building back in 2017, I believe. And so some of those offices were relocated to that newer building, so one of the older buildings are currently not in use. And then this is the zoning map that shows the parcel is zone B1 and is surrounded by A1 zoning. This is the sketch plan I was talking about. Salem Church Road is here, and this is an existing entrance into the site. This is the office building that I was speaking of, the newer office building that they built. And there is an existing parking area that they built along with that. And then there's truck bays, future warehouse. All of this has been constructed with the exception of the warehouse. They do have plans to proceed with building the warehouse soon. And some of you may remember seeing this site plan back in 2016. Now this parking area, one thing to note is that they're generally reserved this section for customers and visitors come into the building to pay bills and visitors to the property. And then this other half of the parking area over here is what they've been using for employees. They're asking to construct another parking area because this parking area is not, cannot accommodate all of the employees that are now working at the site. Because of the fiber, the Firefly Fiber Project, they have additional employees now working at this facility, and they need additional space for them to park. So that is the reasoning behind this request. So as I've kind of talked about, the property is currently developed with several buildings for the CVEC Palmyra office. The main location is in Nelson County. And as I mentioned, there was a previous site plan back in 2016 for the new office building that's on the site, the truck bays, the storage shed, the warehouse, and then the parking areas. The property currently contains 43 spaces in those parking areas that I just showed you, which are shared between customers, visitors, employees. Additional spaces would be needed for additional employees. As part of this review of this site plan, they would, because there are approved erosion and sediment control plans, those plans would have to be amended to accommodate this, to take this parking area into consideration. And that was something that came out of the TRC meeting. So to conclude, this is a sketch plan request for an additional employee parking area. It appears to meet the requirements of the zoning ordinance. They would need to file a final site plan following the sketch plan approval, which would be reviewed by the agencies and planning staff. Staff recommends approval of this site development plan 1910, subject to the three conditions listed in the staff report. We do have a representative. The applicant has a representative present tonight. I can attempt to answer questions you might have at this time.
This will be gravel parking at this time with the possibility of pavement later on.
Correct.
And one of the necessary things is they're doing a lot of construction for Firefly in the county. And if they need these additional spaces, they might have workers that will be working today.
I believe that's correct.
CVEC has headquartered their Firefly operations here in the county on the property there. They have, actually, I spoke to the CEO a couple days ago. They've got 11 new employees because of the Firefly broadband coming into the county. So.
Yeah. I read that there was going to be 10, eventually 10.
11 right now.
Huh?
11.
Well, that's good.
And we do have a representative here tonight as well for the applicant.
Does anyone need to talk to the representative or have any other questions? Okay. If we don't need to have any more questions answered, do I have a motion?
I move to approve SDP 1910, a sketch plan request to construct an employee parking area containing 26 spaces with respect to 41.815 acres of Section A, Parcel 32, subject to the conditions listed in the staff's report.
Okay, I have a motion by Mary Key to approve this. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Lagasina. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Thank you. The next item is under subdivision, SUV 1825, Ryvan Investment and Steger Investments.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, this is a request for a minor rural cluster subdivision as submitted by Ryvan Investments and Steger Investments. This is a request again, for a rural cluster minor subdivision, which will be on property identified as tax map 9A11F. Now, you'll see on the sketch plan there are four parcels listed, but after the parcels are reconfigured, one of those parcels, which is 9A11F, is the one that would be subdivided into a minor rural cluster. So the minor cluster subdivision would contain four building lots and then an open space lot for a total of five lots. So to be clear, there will be a dwelling in the open space, so that is the fifth dwelling that I have listed on the screen. So five dwelling units altogether, four building lots, but the additional dwelling in the open space comes out to five dwellings. The open space is 9.43 acres, and then the four building lots add up to 3.1 acres. And as you see above, again, the parcel is currently, will be reconfigured to be 12.53 acres. And I do have a hard copy of the sketch plan at your podium, just for reference. And the parcel is zoned A1 and located within the Rivanna Community Planning Area. So this is the parcels, the project's location within the county. You can basically see it's located over at Lake Monticello. And this is the zoning map, which shows all four of the parcels that are listed on the sketch plan. Those properties are all zoned A1. Now, you can see that the properties do directly adjoin properties in Lake Monticello. That's what the brown colors that you see on the screen. So Lake Monticello adjoins the site, at least around about three sides of the property. And I don't have this in the presentation, but you'll see in the sketch plan that you're looking at, I believe it's page 2 or 3, they're proposing to reconfigure the existing four parcels to have a different configuration. So what you see on the screen, that's what currently exists, but if they are able to move forward after tonight, then they would reconfigure those parcels. So with a rural cluster subdivision, you have to prepare a yield plan. So they prepared a yield plan based on subdividing one of the four parcels. So this is what you see on the screen. So this parcel 9A11F, which is supposed to be reconfigured to be in this portion of the project area, the yield plan comes out to the five lots. And again, this is the purpose of the yield plan is just to determine the density that they're allowed to do. And then this is the actual sketch plan proposal for the minor rural cluster subdivision. So it's still contained within this area, but you would enter the property here on private roads. And the four building lots that we're speaking of are concentrated here, lot 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the fifth lot, the open space lot, is the largest lot that's gonna be set aside as open space with the 9.43 acres. So again, this is the actual proposal that they wish to move forward with. So as I mentioned, the property is located within the Rivanna Community Planning Area, which is also known as the Lake Monticello Planning Area. The comprehensive plan states that beyond the gates, growth should be neighborhood residential development. This project doesn't exactly meet that, but residents, when during the last review of the comprehensive plan, did say in the Rivanna Community Planning Area that they would also like to preserve the rural character of the surrounding area and protect natural resources. So in some sense, the cluster proposal does fulfill that that goal from the comprehensive plan. So to conclude, this is a sketch plan for a rural cluster minor subdivision. And I'll just add to this, I don't believe that minor rural cluster subdivisions are something we receive on a regular basis. This may even be a first, I'm not exactly sure. But they're proposing a minor rural cluster subdivision with four lots, five dwelling units total when you include the open space. This proposal appears to meet our zoning and subdivision ordinance requirements. They would be required to submit a preliminary and final plat for review by the county and other agencies prior to final approval. So staff recommends approval of SUB 1825 subject to the four conditions listed in the staff report. I can attempt to answer questions you might have, and there is a representative present tonight for the applicant as well.
Most of the open space is what is actually up against Lake Monticello.
Correct.
It looks like only a possibility of lack to actually being able to anywhere close proximity to lots of Lake Monticello.
Correct. They concentrated the open space against Lake Monticello.
A couple of slides ago, can you pull that up? There's a dot right there. Nope.
Okay, sorry.
That's it. But there was something that you said, that stuck out to me, talking about the residents wanting to preserve the rural path, the rural characteristic of the surrounding areas. And that this may be the first time we've ever done.
A minor rural cluster subdivision.
What has been the sense of the residents in terms of, so their position is if it is approved, they are liking what they see, or they're.
Well, this has been an administrative review, so during this particular review of this subdivision, there hasn't been any input or comment from the residents. That what I was speaking of applied to when the county did its last update of the comprehensive plan and sought input from residents concerning the Rivanna community planning area. One of the priorities they mentioned that they would like to see in the Rivanna CPA was preserving and protecting rural character. So they haven't commented on this specific proposal.
That's what I was trying to clarify, just based on this.
The biggest majority of this would be open space at 9.43 acres.
Correct.
75%.
Which is the minimum required.
Looking at the sketch plan and the cross section for the private street, and it may be, this may be more for the applicant.
Okay.
It doesn't seem to meet the access, fire access road requirement. It is shown, showing a 14-foot travelway. The fire code is 20-foot travelway.
Is that the cross section on sheet one?
Yeah. And then looking at the access road, it's going to be more than the requirement to, do we know what the cul-de-sac radius is going to be?
The 100-foot cul-de-sac, I saw some of it.
It looks like less than 100-foot looking at the scale.
But it's showing written there.
Where is that?
And that access road up here, it says existing private road and 50-foot access easement.
Yes, yeah, so easement and actual pavement are two different things. The fire code actually requires a 20-foot pavement. You know, support the weight of the fire code. Now, some of the ways that you could get it, you could use the shoulders if the shoulders are built up enough to support the weight of the fire truck.
We do have some standards in the subdivision ordinance for private roads. I know that we require a minimum 50-foot right of way.
Okay. Any more questions for Mr. Roberts? Would the applicant please come forward?
Good evening. I'm Kelly Strickland. I'm with Shimp Engineering.
Do you understand my question about the access road?
The access road would have to meet the fire entrance requirements. And what we're showing on the cover sheet there, which we've done on several other applications, is a 20-foot travelway, but only 14 feet is paved. So the shoulders are 3 feet each, would have to meet the compaction requirements for fire access.
Yeah, that was my question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it going to be paved or gravel?
I believe it's going to be gravel. What are we showing here? Yeah, I believe we're showing it as a gravel surface.
Okay.
Anybody else have any questions for the applicant? There's no more questions for the applicant.
Mr. Chairman, just one comment. Condition number four talks about preliminary and final subdivision plat approval. One of the things that's going to have to happen is the, what I would typically call a declaration about maintenance of the road and limitation of the uses of the, on the open space, things like that. It isn't specified in here, but that is part of the ordinance requirement.
Okay, thank you very much. Do I have a motion?
I make a motion, sir.
Okay.
I move that the planning commission approve SUV 825, a request for 4 residential lots plus open space with respect to 12.5 million acres of tax map 9, section 3, parcels 11, 11B, 11F, and 11G, subject to the four conditions listed in the staff report.
My question about that motion up there is it doesn't include the other, the fifth residential area that's being allowed in the open space.
That's not necessary for the approval.
Thank you.
For the motion.
I have a motion from Ms. Mary Key. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay. That finishes our regular business for the night. Our last item is the second of two public comment sections. If you might wish to come forward to speak on anything, please come forward. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one, we'll end the public comment section at this time. And if there is no objections from any member of the commission or the staff, we will adjourn. I don't know whether Mr. Miles wants to speak to us at all before we adjourn or anything.
No, sir.
Nothing like being put on the spot, right? Get used to that.
No, I'll reiterate what I said at the beginning. I really appreciate being here, Mr. Dahl, and prior to Mr. Nichols selecting me. My wife and I are very excited to be here, or soon live here, but I look forward to working with you all on some of the upcoming projects this summer into the fall. I guess what I've already told the folks in planning and community development, I'm doing about a 30 to 60 day, as people say, you learn with a fire hose for a while or a straw, and then, you know, kind of get down to that level. So I'm kind of in that. I'm very experienced in this, but also want to learn all the nuances of what you all do and how I can help you all and support you in your decisions. So thank you.
We want to thank you for being with us, and we are glad to have you with us and so forth like that. So I got to meet you at the interview process. Have quite a bit of experience with the health of Kim. So if there's no objections, we will adjourn at this time at 8:29.
Was the planning manager and zoning administrator? Basically the planning director there for you. But we had four committees.